This is Pit of the West, a weird Western podcast written by Tanner Adams and produced by B. Wynn, with main cast voices by Patrick Kilday, Billy Norris, and Matt McCann. A few days had passed since the trio left Juarez. Their driver, Raphael Ashton, said little. Their harrowing experience with the living dead left them all shaken up. Neither had tried to speak to Ash since they left, and it seemed it would remain that way. As they rode, they discussed their plans.
Once we get to Houston, I should be able to charter us a boat. We'll just have to lie low for a few days.
Sister, we've been on the road for weeks. Can't we hit the town once?
Don't think we have a choice. There's miles of impassable swamp between us and New Orleans. Besides, your wanted poster will already be all over town. We'll have to take a boat and a leap of faith.
Something you have experience with.
Faith? Sure I do. That's the easy part.
What, you serious? After all you've been through, you're going to tell me that faith comes easy to you?
I didn't say it was easy, just that it was the easy part. Ezra, you've gotten a glimpse into my world. All the evil mankind doesn't see, I see every day. The temptation to lose my faith happens more than you could imagine. But my God can move mountains, and thus I persevere.
My faith ain't the mountain-moving type, but I'm glad you feel so strongly about it. I'd be dead if it weren't for you, many times over. So I figure there must be something to it, this faith thing.
There is. Some days it's all I have. I know my mission, I have my weapons, and I have my faith. Long as those things are close to my heart, nothing can stop me.
Amen, sister.
Wish I could say the same.
Ash, you holding up okay?
Yeah, I think so. Had some time to think it all over. That was a lot to take on, all at once. The dead rising up, the existence of demons and holy miracles. It's all too much, but I think I'll be okay. Like having a hood taken off your head you didn't know was on it in the first place. I can really see the world for what it is now, and that's terrifying, but liberating. Just to know what I saw was real, I don't think my life can ever quite be the same.
I know where you're coming from, Ash. I thought the same when I first saw the otherworldly. I want to thank you for taking us all this way.
I told you I'd take you to Houston, and I intend to. And you, Ezra, that is your real name, isn't it?
It is.
So that was you on the poster? They call you Gentleman Davis, too?
No, that ain't me. And that ain't my life anymore. I used to work for them, though, stealing and killing and such, till I quit by way of stealing from them. They tracked me down, and I killed every one of them black-hearted sumbitches. But I was scarred for it.
Ezra peeled the glove off his hand, giving Ash a close look at his claw. His arm was covered by a black hide with a sheen like uncured leather. He flexed his fingers, slowly pushing the claws out from his fingertips.
This is the price I paid for my sin and my greed. My curse. But the sister and I are trying to rid the world of the demon who gave this power to me.
And that's in, where was it? New Orleans?
Reckon so.
You're messing with the forces of evil. Just promise you'll be careful out there.
Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and staff, they comfort me.
Real pretty, sister. I like that.
It's Psalm 23. You've never heard it?
Look ahead. You can just see the city in the distance.
One more step towards our goal and the banishment of Asmodeus.
After riding into town, Ezra and Schultz parted ways with Ash. Schultz made sure to pay him well.
Here you are. Thanks, Ash. We wouldn't have gotten here without you. I trust this'll be enough for your discretion?
Your generosity has been well noted, sister. No offense to either of you. Y'all were fine traveling companions. But I hope we never cross paths again. Happy trails to you. Hope you find what you're after in New Orleans.
We will.
The two paid for a few nights' sleep in a cheap hotel, unsure when they would be able to leave town. They rounded the stairs, and Ezra immediately plopped down on the bed, grateful for the moment's respite.
We finally made it. I'm gonna get me a beer and a fine cigar.
No, Ezra, we've caused enough trouble as it is. If your name has spread to San Francisco, you'll be all over the news here. Besides, if Texas Rangers catch wind you're in their state, they won't give you a trial.
You're gonna tell me we came all this way, across the whole United States, and I can't even have a drink?
Yes, I am. We're gonna get a nice quiet room while we wait for the next steamboat, and you aren't going to do a damn thing. We're way too close for you to get caught on the wrong end of a noose.
Damn it, sister. Fine, I'll stay. Once this is all done, figure we'll go our separate ways anyway. Then I can get all the drinks I want.
Yeah, guess you can. We can go downstairs for dinner. The manager said it was included with the price of our room.
The room was sparse, but homey. On the nightstand was a small vase with a wilted flower, and a large mirror hung above the nightstand. Ezra inspected his appearance. His beard had grown bushy and wild.
So what do we do now?
We rest and wait for the ship. Tomorrow I'll go find out when the next ship's leaving.
Fine.
Sleep overtook the sister within the hour. Ezra pretended to read her Bible while he waited for her loud snoring and snuck out as soon as he heard it. He had earned an evening's respite.
Not gonna tell me where I can and can't go.
Ezra painted the town red as he never had before. He had been on the road for so long and experienced such mortal dread that the carousing he did released stress he had kept bottled up since his deadly run-in with Gentleman Davis. As he kicked back his sixth glass of whiskey, he found that the evening had blurred by and the bar was soon closing. Ezra stumbled out onto the street, more pickled than a cucumber, with a bottle of cheap whiskey in his hands.
Oh, Susanna, don't you cry for me. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do with banjo on my knee. No one tells me what to do. You're not the boss of me. You're nothing but a ruler-swinging nun. That's what you are. Ain't gonna run into no lawmen nor no ghosts or ghoulies. I ain't scared. Scared of nothing. Only had 8 glasses of whiskey.
Ezra stumbled around for some time, eventually finding his footing as he walked down the city streets. His footsteps echoed around him as he wandered through Houston, drunk on cheap whiskey and his sense of freedom. He soon found himself on the docks. The wind whistled quietly through the sails of mammoth boats. Farther on, the wind suddenly stopped.
Oh yeah, that's the ticket. 5 glasses ain't enough to put me down. Now it's just me and the ocean. One of these boats is gonna get me to New Orleans. Gonna go to Bourbon Street, maybe even to Storyville. Oh yeah. Who's that? Who's crying? Hey, you, lady. What's the matter?
Ezra saw a woman in a white dress standing at the pier. She faced the ocean and wept into her hands. Ezra walked towards her, mustering his sobriety.
Lady, you all right? It's not a good place to cry out here on the docks at the witching hour.
Oh, I always come out here. Sorry, I didn't mean for anyone to see me like this. I'm Lucia.
I'm pretty drunk. Sorry. Listen, you shouldn't be out here by yourself. Rogues and criminals stalk the streets, you know? What's your name?
Lucia Ann. I'm waiting for my husband, actually. I come down here every night to wait for his return.
Well, you're a good wife. I'm sure your husband knows you're thinking about him. Sure gets mighty lonely out here.
It does get lonely. But I know my William is looking up at the same stars. And, in its own way, it's nice. There's no one down here at night. It's peaceful. I can think about my sweet William's return He's such a good man.
Oh, I'm sure he is. He got you that ring?
Yes, he did. It was his grandmother's. He gave it to me just before he went off to war. My William is such a good soldier, so full of life.
But, what war is William fighting in?
Why, the War of Secession. My William is a Navy man. He's going up the Mississippi to fight for our state.
What year is it?
It's 1862. Don't be daft.
I think I should get back to the hotel. I think I hear my mama calling.
No, stay with me.
As Ezra stood up, the bride grabbed his shoulder with an iron grip. Her hand was colder than a block of ice, and Ezra shivered as he tried to get her off.
Did you think I wouldn't notice?
Let go of me. Notice what?
You shaved your mustache, but I knew it was you. Knew it was you before you even sat down next to me. You'd think after all this time I wouldn't recognize you, William?
What? I'm not your damn husband. Get off me.
You can't fool me. I waited for you, William. I've waited so long. Now keep your vows and be with me forever.
No, damn it. Let me go. I ain't your damn husband.
As Ezra tore himself away from the woman, he broke out into a sprint. He dashed down the docks, fear and adrenaline flowing through his body. Cold sweat beaded on his forehead as he dared himself to turn around. She was gone.
Thank God.
The bride was in front of him, her clothes and hair sopping wet, her skin a pallid shade of gray, waterlogged and bloated from her long nap in the ocean. She reached out a hand, flesh sagging off her bones.
Hello, darling. I've missed you so. Now we can be together forever.
Ezra awoke at the hotel, his head throbbing like a rotten tooth. He rolled over and saw Sister Schultz standing there, her arms crossed. He rolled back over, as if she would go away.
Ezra, get up!
Go away.
What did I tell you? You're lucky the dock workers found you and not the sheriff. And then I found them before anything else happened. I had to drag you back to the hotel. Do you know how odd that looks? A nun dragging a drunkard?
Shoot, I know. At least I didn't get caught.
That's not the point. Get up. There's breakfast downstairs. Then we can lay low for the rest of the day while I charter our trip.
Think I'll pass on breakfast. Still pretty hungover. You know, I had the craziest dream. There was a lady down on the docks, and she said that she'd been waiting for her husband since 1862.
As Ezra sat upright in bed, he realized it was no dream. The woman appeared in the mirror, and her waterlogged corpse blew him a kiss. The mirror cracked down the center.
What was that?
Oh, God. Hey, sister, do you know anything about ghosts?
Yes. Why do you ask?
This lady on the docks. I thought she was just a dream. Insisted that I was her husband. She told me he was a sailor during the war. I think she drowned herself waiting for him to come home.
Ezra, I can't believe you did this. You sneak up for one night and now you're being haunted? This is just great. I should have kept a better eye on you.
No, sister. It was my fault.
Of course it is. But we can fix this. I do think this proves my theory. You're a magnet for the supernatural now.
Thanks for the encouragement, sister. What do you want me to do?
Well, we've got to find out who this bride is. Did she give you any other information?
Her name was Lucia. And her husband, William, I think, was in the Navy.
Guess that'll do for a start. I'll have to go and look at public records. For God's sake, just stay here. Sleep off your hangover, get some breakfast. I don't care. I'll see you later.
Ezra sat in silence for a long time, and he eventually laid his head down to sleep. He awoke some time later, unsure how long he had been out. The bride was waiting at the foot of his bed.
Glad you're awake, my love. I waited so long for you, I knew a few more hours wouldn't matter.
Ezra was surprised. Except for the unnatural ivory pallor of her skin, she looked alive again. Her black hair floated around her as she looked down at him.
Lady, I don't know you, and you're sorely mistaken if you think I'm anyone's husband.
Liar!
The vase flew across the room and shattered on the wall. Ezra grit his teeth nervously, but managed to stay calm. He had faced worse than her in the past weeks. He just had to keep her occupied.
Oh, just kidding, love of my life. How wonderful it is to be by your side again.
Oh, William, what a card you are. Come here and give me a kiss.
Ezra tried to squirm away, but she floated closer to him. As she leaned in to kiss him, Ezra felt a cold as deep as the grave. She melted into him and then disappeared, leaving Ezra alone.
Thank God that's over.
Ezra closed his eyes for a moment, then opened them wide. His mouth moved of its own volition, and her voice came out of it.
Thank you for that, darling. Now open the window so we can truly be together. Forever.
I would like to look through your marriage certificates, please.
I'll need a name, ma'am.
After leaving the hotel, Schultz found the public records office, hoping to track down the bride's husband. She wondered if he had survived the war at all, but his first name was all she had to go on.
His name is William.
William?
Yes, William. And his wife's name? Lucia.
You don't have a last name for either of them?
No, I... Do you think I could just look myself?
Ma'am, if you can give me more information, I'll fetch it for you. Only employees are allowed in the record room.
I just know her husband was in the Navy, if that helps, and that they were married sometime in the 60s.
Give me a moment.
The clerk returned a few minutes later with a hand truck stacked high with boxes. Schultz crossed herself.
These are all the marriage records in Houston for 1860 through 1865. They're organized by last name, so best of luck to you. And I'll leave you to it.
I hope Ezra's doing better than I am right now.
The bride, Lucia, looked at Ezra with eyes full of love, begging him to consider what she was offering. But Ezra had other plans in mind.
Darling, please, let me show you how much you mean to me. All you have to do is jump from the window, and we'll be able to walk hand in hand together once again. We will live forever in the immaterial world. Just let this happen, and you'll finally have your Rosa in death as well as life.
Life? Lady, you're trying to make me off myself, and I don't have any intention of dying till I'm good and ready.
But me and more, death is just a bridge to be crossed. The real journey awaits is on the other side. Trust me, know that I only have what's best for you in mind.
Hell no! And like I said, I ain't your damn husband.
So you say, but I know you're my husband. You've forgotten about me already.
Just listen. My friend here, the nun, she's gonna track your husband down so he can prove that...
As Ezra tried to explain, Lucia reached inside his chest, her hand passing through his body. She squeezed his heart with a frigidly cold hand and stared him down.
I'm so sorry it has to come to this, me and Moore, but I can't allow you to live under these delusions anymore. I know you're the man I love, and my William would never abandon me, even in death. I hope you understand that this is for your own good.
Lucia floated down to Ezra, and her body passed through him. The cold feeling enveloped his entire body, and his claw extended and retracted as he shuddered in protest. He lifted his hand slowly, but his body was no longer under his control.
No! Get out!
You will rise!
Ezra protested, trying to prevent his body's intruder from taking over. However, he could feel his will weakening with every step. She was winning, and there was nothing he could do about it. Ezra felt his lips move as she spoke from his mouth.
Come with me, my darling. We'll go down to the dock where I left this world behind. We'll die hand in hand, emerge as spirits, and live forever.
Ezra resisted with all his might, but eventually he could fight no longer. She lifted him off the bed, and he walked, slow and plodding steps at first, as the last vestiges of willpower left his body. Then, more assuredly, as her possession encompassed him, completely. After what felt like an eternity of sorting through records and files, Sister Schultz finally found what she needed: a marriage certificate of one William Cutter and Lucia Rosales, as well as a few other documents. She grabbed them and ran out of the records hall without a word.
Hey, you can't just take those.
Sorry, doing the Lord's work.
Schultz dashed back to the hotel. Though it was miles away, and the Texas heat bore down on her as afternoon gave way to evening, she ran the miles like her life depended on it. She knew Ezra's did.
Ezra, I found... Oh my.
Seeing the room in shambles, claw marks everywhere, she knew where to go next. Praying for strength in her hour of desperation, she ran for the docks.
Hush now, Milo. We're almost there. It won't be long now. Don't worry, it only hurts a bit. You'll fall asleep before long. I know you wanted to fight in the war because you felt like it was your duty. I don't hold that against you, William. All I ask is that you let the sea take you once again.
The setting sun cast a fiery shade of orange onto the ocean as the dock workers went home for the night. No one paid attention to Ezra as he walked across the docks. He tried to summon the last reserves of his will, but to no avail.
Oh, my darling, don't be scared. This is for the best. I've been waiting so long, and surely you can do this for me.
Wait, Lucia, wait!
The two of them stopped, and she turned Ezra's body to face Schultz. She had not heard that name in a long time.
Lucia, I need you to listen. That man is not who you're so convinced he is. Your real husband, William Cutter, is a captain on these docks, and he's still alive.
No, that can't be. No, this is my husband, and I'm taking him with me.
I think we both know he's not. If you'll give me one chance, I'll show you where your real husband is, and you can talk to him again. But I need you to promise me something.
If I refuse?
Then you'll never know if I'm right or not. I need you to promise me that if the person I show you is your William, that no one need be hurt. I understand your pain, Lucia.
No, you don't. How would you know? Have you ever been in love, sister?
Yes, I was once. But I had a higher calling, to help those in need, and to fight against the forces of darkness. I hope you understand that I would not try to deceive you, Lucia. You need closure, and I'm trying to give you that.
Fine. Take me to them, if you're so sure. But know that if you're wrong...
Lucia pulled back the hammer on Ezra's revolver.
Let's go, Lucia.
The bar crawled with sailors whose drunken carousing tapered off into whispers as the odd duo entered. Sister Schultz walked quickly, burdened by the life she held in her hands. Ezra followed behind. Schultz went straight to the bartender.
You lost, sister?
No, I'm not. I need to speak to William Cutter, now.
Captain Cutter? He's over there in the corner. Tonight's not one of his good nights, so be careful.
The two walked through the bar and saw a middle-aged sailor sitting in the corner, nursing a bottle. He looked up at them blearily.
Are you Captain Cutter?
Aye, and who wants to know? You gonna tell me to quit my sinning ways? Well, get in line. My soul's lost at sea.
Not exactly. I'll get you next round if you come with me for a minute.
Well, why not? Makes my life more interesting anyway. Lead on, sister and company.
Schultz and Ezra led Captain Cutter out of the bar onto a side street where it was just the three of them. Cutter walked along slowly, gripping Ezra's shoulder for balance. Finally, they were alone. Cutter wrinkled his face skeptically.
Now what have you dragged me out here for? Why can't you just let this old widower drink in peace?
We have something to show you, Mr. Cutter. I don't want you to be alarmed, but... Is that him, Lucia?
Ezra's body shook and shuddered as the ghost of Lucia exited him. She stood before her husband once again, wearing her wedding dress, and smiled.
Lucia? What is this?
Hello, William. I waited so long for you.
But you're... I went to your funeral, Lucia. You're dead. This can't be.
I'm here, my love.
Ain't gonna possess him, are you?
What?
No, I'm so sorry for that. Willem, you have to understand, I waited for you while you're at war. To see you alive and in the flesh, it brings me peace. When I got the letter that you died at sea...
You don't have to explain. Lucia, what did you do to these people?
I thought this man was you. I thought if I could see you again, that you would come with me and live eternally.
Lucia, that is no life to live. You must release them. I mourned for you too when I returned. Visiting your grave was the worst day of my life. And though your loss pains me to this day, we cannot let it consume our lives.
My love, you're right. Sister, Ezra, I'm truly sorry for putting you through this ordeal. Thank you for letting me see my love one last time.
I can't imagine what you've been through, Lucia. We forgive you. Right, Ezra?
Right.
Thank you. I believe it's my time to go now. Take care, my sweet William. I will see you when it's your time. Be the good man I know you are.
It was good to see you again, mi mariposa. We will meet again.
Lucia smiled brightly and started to glow. The three of them watched her spirit grow brighter and brighter, then disappear, leaving the three of them alone.
I don't know how to explain that. It was right strange to see someone you know has passed on. I don't care to overthink it, but thank you for that. I'm sorry her spirit tormented you.
Well, I'm still here. Reckon all the pain she put herself through made her a different woman than the one you married. At least you two got to see each other one last time.
Yes, we did. And I thank you for that. You've made an old sailor happy. Now, if there's anything I can do for you, just say the word.
Now that you mention it, there is something we could use your help with.
Though their journey seemed close to an end, danger waited for them beneath the smoky lights of the Crescent City, and they drew ever closer to their fate. See what lies in wait for them in the next episode of The Pit of the West. Thanks for listening to Pit of the West. Featured in this episode are the voices of Patrick Kilday, Billy Norse, Fee Wynn, Dan Reed, Sarah Olney, Bill Adams, and Tanner Adams. Special thanks to Alex Wink for the intro and outro music, Ariel Perez for cover art, and John Harbaugh for additional firearm sound effects.
Hey, this is Fee from Pit of the West. We're at Pit of the West on Twitter. Join us on next week's episode.
Deep in the swamps of New Orleans, beyond where any maps would show, lies the sprawling manor of the Craigs. A long, winding wooden path shows the way through the foggy night to the sprawling, ramshackle abode. Though the horrors the family has committed have echoed through American history, the Craigs would never hang for their crimes. Those who seek vengeance against them are never heard from again. Only the crocodiles know where they lay. This night finds two cousins of that abominable family, Jed and Jethro, standing guard outside their family home.
I keep telling you, ain't gonna catch nothing out here, little brother.
Shut it, Jed. You're breaking my concentration. And just because you're born 10 minutes before me, don't make you my big brother.
You're a damn fool if you think you're... Hey, Jethro, what's that?
I said, shut it.
I'm telling you, there's a guy over there. Got himself a fancy suit, too.
Jethro cursed his brother under his breath as he looked up. Sure enough, there was a man wearing a red paisley vest and a wide-brimmed hat. Absurd as this was, the two brothers weren't the type to ask questions to the effect of how this man found their family home or why he isn't melting in the Louisiana heat. No, their job was simple. To guard their home, no matter what.
Hands in the air, mister! Now!
But the man just kept walking, his hat pulled over his eyes. The brothers looked at each other in the way that only brothers do and nodded. They opened fire. To no great effect. The man didn't even slow his stride as the bullets passed through his body. The brothers didn't waste a moment pulling the second hammer back. The man broke into a dead sprint, and they fumbled in surprise as he nearly passed them.
Shoot him! Shoot him now!
Boys, you be careful now. All that thrashing around is sure to attract some alligators. Asmodeus slowed his run to a walk as he proceeded up the stairs to the front door of Craig House. He didn't bother with the door and simply passed through it.
Hello? Is anybody home? Any Craigs up at this hour?
Elias Craig, the long-lived patriarch of the Craig family, rolled into the room in his wheelchair, which he piloted with his right foot. The rest of his body was feeble, curled up into itself, but the old man looked at Asmodeus with a sharp eye. If he was surprised Asmodeus found his ancestral home, he didn't show it.
Well, well, well. You're looking well, old man. Sorry about the boys out there. They were trying to shoot me.
Never mind them. They're offshoots of the family tree. A diluted bloodline if there ever was one. Now state your name and your business here. We don't get too many visitors round these parts.
Very well. My name is Mr. Sharp.
Speak your name, demon, and show me your true form. I would not speak to you in this mockery of flesh.
Why, this is my true form.
Don't play games with me. I have taken great pains and arcane measures to keep this house safe from prying eyes. If you're here, you're either a more powerful sorcerer than I, or else you came from the abyss. And I've slain all the magicians that would rival me years ago. Now, for the last time, show me your true form.
I am Asmodeus, Duke of Hell!
The human disguise of Asmodeus burst like a rotting carcass, revealing scaly demonic skin beneath. What Elias Crank saw would drive the average man to madness, but he beheld the demon with an expression of mild interest.
Does this suit you better?
Much. Now, to what do I owe the honor of this visit? I would like to know how you're here at all.
Astral projection. Picked up the trick from a fallen angel many years ago. My connection to this realm is tenuous, and I cannot stay long. There's a man coming to New Orleans, one Ezra Gray, and a nun. The nun is the last of the Order of St. Marcellinus Exorcista.
Schultz, a thorn in my side. And what does that have to do with me?
The man was foolish enough to take a deal from me. They seek your home, and they will ask use of your resonator to rid him of my spirit. She will most likely trade her cross for it.
And why would this not be an agreeable trade? I have no stakes in the wars of hell. To have the cross would be to crush the Order of Marcellinus.
You believe her cross to hold power unto itself, but she has used her holy power without it. For her is no more than a bauble, but she would have you believe it holds the remaining power of her order. The man, Ezra Gray, bears my blood as part of his bargain, and I intend for him to be my conduit unto the earth. With every drop of blood he spills, it quickens in his flesh, drawing ever closer to his heart. But not quickly enough. Now, if I may offer a proposal...
You must think me a fool to believe I would bargain with the likes of you. Begone, demon, or I will banish you back to your petty kingdom of hell.
I see you, a man of great power. You've lived a long and storied life, 140 years by my count, but I see your body is weak and ailing. You need my help.
I need nothing from you. I raised this home from the swamps with my own two hands, and sired a pure bloodline which inspires terror throughout the land. You dare presume to call me weak, Duke of Hell? I have held palaver with the Prince of Darkness himself. You know not to whom you speak. You are no more than a mote of dust in my eye, and I grow weary of you. Begone!
Elias lazily extended a hand, and great tendrils of arcane power grew around it. Asmodeus had only a moment before the wizened sorcerer banished him.
I do not mean to question you, Elias. I only say that while your power remains formidable, your flesh weakens. It is only inevitable that your flesh will be weary, even for a sorcerer of your power.
Yes, I suppose it is. Even with my most powerful blood magics and sacrifices, my body continues to age. There is nothing to be done, it seems.
There is something you can do about that. A plan that would benefit both of us. All you would need to do is wait for my Rube and the Nun to arrive in New Orleans, then bring them here. I'll take it from there.
I cannot bring myself to believe that's all you want. What would your end of the bargain be?
I want a physical form. Yours.
What you propose has never been done. The ultimate blasphemy. A hybrid of demon and man. Interesting. So you offer me immortality?
Yes. You would have all my powers, and together, you and your family would take dominion over the earth. Do we have a deal? My time is drawing short. Asmodeus extended a claw and held it out to the old man. Elias Craik held the demon's gaze without fear or trepidation, and nodded slowly. He reached out a feeble, emaciated hand and shook it.
Why, when you put it that way, how could I say no?